WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Man, oh man, is it hump day already? I guess it is. The week flies by when you're having fun. It's always a fun time here on Current Sports, and we have a fun show in store for you today. On today's show, we will chat with Brian Callaway. That's right, sports writer, MSU sports writer for Lansing State Journal. Yep, you don't want to miss that. Brian's always a great guest. Looking forward to chatting with him about David Thomas, about his love for baseball, and hey, he just got married. How about that? We'll also talk about the Detroit Tigers, Travis Bader, Barbershop Wednesday, a stack show in store for you. You don't want to touch that dial. Tune in, folks. But before we get to all of that, hey, here's your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon, sports fans. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Wednesday, July 9th. Former Oakland University star and Okemos native Travis Bader has signed a deal with Asvel in France. Bader inked the deal Tuesday night and can get out of his contract if he makes an NBA team. San Antonio Spurs guard Tony Parker is the majority owner and president of Asvel. Bader, who was not selected in last month's NBA draft, is currently playing for the Philadelphia 76ers in the Orlando Summer League. He will also be playing for the Golden State Warriors in the Las Vegas Summer League later this month. The Detroit Tigers were able to salvage a shaky start by Justin Verlander in last night's game versus the LA Dodgers. JV gave up 5 runs in the first inning, but Verlander settled down after his terrible first inning, and the Tigers rallied in emphatic fashion for a 14-5 victory over the Dodgers Tuesday night. The Dodgers managed only one hit off Verlander after the first inning, and Detroit quickly tied it up with 5 runs in the second. Detroit right-handed pitcher Max Scherzer faces Dodgers right-handed pitcher Zach Greinke on Wednesday. The game is 1:08 p.m. today. We will keep you updated throughout the hour. At this point, Rick Porcello is not on track to make the American League All-Star team based on the final vote. Porcello is third in the standings in the final vote, which allows fans to vote for one of 5 players to make the All-Star team in both American and National League. The voting so far goes to Chris Sale, who leads from the White Sox, followed by Garrett Richards from the Angels, Rick Porcello at 3 from the Tigers, Corey Kluber coming in at 4, and Dallas Keuchel coming in at number 5. Voting will end at 4 p.m. on Thursday. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is tearing up the NBA Summer League, and his dominance continued yesterday in an 80-78 win over the Miami Heat. Caldwell-Pope scored 26 points, including a game-winning 3-pointer with 6.6 seconds remaining. In 3 Summer League contests, KCP has scored 26, 30, and 26 points, all in Pistons victories. In the most shocking result of the World Cup, Germany annihilated host Brazil 7-1 in the first semifinal game. Germany led 5-0 at halftime, scoring an astounding 4 goals in 6 minutes. Brazil, without stars Neymar and Thiago Silva, looked shell-shocked for most of the match. Germany will face the winner of Argentina and the Netherlands for the World Cup title. 2 University of Miami linebackers were arrested for allegedly raping a 17-year-old. According to case documents, both Alex Figueroa and Jawan Blue both allegedly slipped something into the girl's drink and later performed sexual acts without her consent. Coral Gables police reports that both players came to the police station and confessed their crimes. Both have been kicked off the football team. The UFC 176 fight, scheduled to go on pay-per-view on August 2nd, has been officially canceled due to a neck injury to fighter Jose Aldo. The bout was set to take place in Los Angeles between Aldo and Chad Mendes. The injury to Aldo is not severe, and the fight will be rescheduled sometime in October. It was announced yesterday that the Oprah Winfrey Network will be airing an interview with Matt Sandusky, son of former Penn State coach Jerry Sandusky, on July 17th. The interview will touch on sexual abuse and manipulation by his father and also recalling his counts of childhood. Jerry Sandusky is currently serving a lengthy prison sentence. And finally, in bizarre MLB news, a fan who fell asleep during a Yankees and Red Sox game aired on ESPN is suing both the MLB and ESPN for defaming him during a broadcast. Broadcasters Dan Schulman and John Crook are also involved in the suit for, quote, disparaging words and verbal attacks during the broadcast. No word has came out yet from the MLB or ESPN regarding the allegations and the lawsuit. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. Man, oh, man, can you believe that? I wanted to bring that story up during yesterday's current sports. A fan decides to sleep during a game, during a baseball game, and his name is Andrew Rector, and he has filed a $10 million defamation suit against the team, MLB, and ESPN. Can you believe that? He sleeps during a baseball game. He feels as though, you know, the camera shouldn't have been on him, and feels as though there were some disparaging words said about him, an avalanche of them, so to speak, and was pretty upset and has decided to sue. I cannot believe some of the things that happens in our country today. I tell you, you can sue for anything now. Again, a fan sleeps, cameras pan to him. I guess I don't know what was said. I didn't see the broadcast or what was said, what the announcer said. But, I mean, come on. This happens all the time. It's just like me going out and shooting a Lansing Lugnuts game and getting a fan, you know, to start my highlights, a fan sleeping or something like that, and airing it and joking around about it, and then that fan decides to sue me. I cannot believe some of the things. I mean, people are just so money hungry. That's just a man who is just money hungry and is trying to get over quickly. Oh boy, that's a funny story. He'll never win. If he does, there's something seriously wrong in his country if he wins that lawsuit. My goodness, $10 million. Oh boy, oh boy. Folks, we have a great current sports for you. We have a ton to talk about. How about, you know, besides the disparaging fan who's upset and suing for $10 million, we got some more serious things to talk about, like the World Cup. How about Germany? Germany is for real. I think Germany is for real, folks, and I think they proved it yesterday. Driving, you know, on my lunch break, catching that game on my radio, I thought I had to look down because I have Sirius XM radio, and it's pretty cool. Sirius XM actually shows you the score of the sporting event that's going on right on your radio. So I'm driving, you know, it's at the very beginning of the match, the first, you know, 20 or 30 minutes of the match, in my car driving, listening to the match, and I look down, and I see that Germany's up 2-0. So I'm like, okay. But then all of a sudden I hear the announcer say, you know, he's losing his mind through my speakers. And I hear him come out and say, oh my goodness, it's 5-0. And I said, hold on. I'm looking at my screen here and it's 2-0 right now. What are you talking about? So I looked down at my radio. I decided to refresh it. Next thing you know, as soon as I refresh it, lo and behold, it was 5-0. I could not believe. I almost crashed my car, you know, looking down at that. I could not believe the performance Germany put on. What was more surprising, though? I mean, this is Brazil. This is a heralded team in the world of soccer. This is, you know, one of the creme de la creme teams in all of the world when it comes to football. And they just got just mollywopped like that, you know, 7-0. I couldn't believe that. I could not believe what was going on, folks. But, you know, hey, I mean, it has to be, if you're a fan of Brazil, I actually had Brazil winning the whole thing. 7-1 was the final of that one. But I was sitting there watching it. You know, I had Brazil winning the whole thing. And watching that, I mean, this is one of those games that, you know, if to equate it to, probably football. I mean, this is like, in the Super Bowl, getting completely blown out by, like, you know, 40 or 50 points. I mean, that's how I equate this loss. And to see it, you know, a team like Brazil, who is, by the way, hosting the World Cup, to get embarrassed like that in their own venue, on the world's biggest stage, in the world's most popular sport, and to see the looks on, you know, countless Brazilian fans who attended that match, I couldn't believe it. You know, and Matt's here with me right now. Matt, you know, when I got home, you know, after I had my lunch, and you know, when I got home, I told myself I was going to go on my lunch break, go home, finish watching the match. I mean, I actually went home and took a nap because there's no way in all of sports, in the world of soccer specifically, that somebody is coming back being down 5+ goals. I mean, it was just, I knew it wasn't happening. I decided to just take a nap and it was over and I woke up to a 7-1 final. But can you believe that? It's crazy, crazy stuff. And I think you predicted Germany to top Brazil, but I see where you're coming from, but nobody expected it to be a 7-1 route. And looking at how, the USA handled its own against Germany. I mean, that was a 1-0 game. And then you look at Brazil, and they get killed like that. That's crazy.
It is crazy. And to me, I think it was just sort of like, you know, Germany just broke Brazil's spirit. Yeah. I think the entire tournament, Brazil had been playing as the favorite, as the heavy favorite. All the pressure was on them. The whole country was just waiting for, you know, it's either a win or failure, basically, for the entire tournament. So when they get a flurry of negative goals, I mean, they lose Neymar in the previous match. They lose Thiago Silva in this match, too. And once Germany took that lead and they just had that flurry of goals, like, what, 4 goals in 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something? I mean, it was insane. You know, it was over. They broke their spirit. The game was over at 3-0.
Crazy.
They had no chance to get back. They just looked beaten down, tired, and they looked disinterested.
They did. You know, and it's so shy because, again, this is Brazil we're talking about. I mean, this is a team who has a rich history when it comes to soccer, not just the World Cup. And you think that, I mean, a lot of people had them as favorites, you know, going into this tournament. Of course, there's a lot of pressure when you're playing in the World Cup in your own country. But this is Brazil. Brazil doesn't get beat 7-1. You got to be kidding me. So I think Germany is for real, man. I mean, this is, you know, it's pretty remarkable seeing how this German team has really matured throughout the World Cup, and they're proving a lot of people wrong and really putting their name in concrete as now one of the best teams in the country, without a doubt. I think they'll play the Dutch. What do you think? What do you think is going to happen?
I think they'll probably play the Dutch too, and I think it's going to be a great match. I think either team that comes out of the Argentina-Netherlands matchup, it's going to make for a good final. And hopefully today's action is better than yesterday's, because it was a laugher. I mean, I was really looking forward to going home and watching the end, and you just didn't have to. It was already decided.
Nope,
I mean,
decided to take a nap.
You couldn't even respond to your friends texting you about, hey, check out the game. Oh, what's happening? Oh, Germany score. You know, Germany's up 2-0. Two seconds later, 3-0, 4. I mean, it was just insane.
Ridiculous.
Never seen anything like that in the World Cup. Certainly not in the semifinals.
Right.
And definitely not to Brazil. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was one of the more surprising stories. That and, again, the sleeping fan. Come on, man.
I love that.
Crazy is that? I mean, the guy falls asleep. Now, did you see the broadcast? Was there anything said wrong by the announcers during that time?
I think it was all just joking.
Yeah, they're joking.
But, you know, the guy's a used car salesman.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that.
He says it's negatively affecting his business, because come in and say, oh, yeah, you were that guy who fell asleep at the Sox game.
How is that negatively affecting his business?
Well,
that should be positive.
I'm not going to buy a car from a guy who goes to Red Sox Yankees game and falls asleep.
Well, maybe, yeah.
And that's what he's arguing.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I don't think he has $1 leg to stand on. Yeah, for $10 million, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's pretty, when I heard that, that's pretty funny stuff. Well, man, we have a great show, though, in store for all of our listeners today. I'm excited. You know, I'm a little tired. I've been tired this week, man. Maybe I need a vacation, dude, because this week has been, you know, these past 2 weeks, I've just been really tired. I've been downing coffee left and right. We've actually, this week is our first week switching the current sports TV time from 6 p.m. to 10 a.m. We're just doing this as just a summer thing. So this morning I got a chance to sit down for Current Sports TV, our new time again, 10 a.m. I sat down with Keenan Wetzel, who is a MSU redshirt men's basketball player for the Michigan State men's basketball team. And he's a great, great kid. He's so interesting because, you know, he has a passion for filmmaking. And I believe we alluded to this on the show a few weeks ago, especially last week when we were talking about Keenan being on the show. He has a movie entitled The Cager that should be released this fall. And it's interesting because The Cager, I sat down with him this morning. Again, you can catch that, the Current Sports TV episode, and sit down with Keenan Wetzel tomorrow. That's right, each and every Thursday night at 10 p.m. You know the drill. At 10 p.m. on WKRTV, Current Sports TV airs. And, you know, for this episode with Keenan, I was sitting there talking to him, and he's breaking down the storyline for the Cager. I don't know if you know the storyline, Matt, but the storyline is basically looking at a kid who was trying to make his NBA dreams come true, realized that, you know, due to injury and other reasons, that those dreams weren't going to come true, and, you know, was trapped with this, really a point in his life where he's like, okay, man, well, this is, I put all my eggs in this one basket, and I'm not going to make it to the NBA. what do I do with my life now? And was struggling and trying to find himself in that regard. And it's almost kind of like the Delvon Rose story where, you know, Delvon, you know, he's plagued with injuries and realized that his NBA dreams aren't going to come true. This is the swan. This is a story that many, including myself to a degree, that many people who love the game of basketball or any sport, when they realize that they're not going professional, they have to face a decision. Okay, what do I want to do with my life? And that's basically what The Cager is about. And Delvon Rowe is going to be playing that lead role in the movie. Interesting stuff. Again, it should be released this fall.
It is interesting, and not exactly a stretch for Delvon, like you said,
right,
in terms of getting into character.
Right,
because,
exactly.
You know, it's pretty much his life.
He's been down that road.
But it's an important lesson for everybody, and even, you know, looking at a big-time college player,
right,
whose dreams just don't pan out. I mean, that is an interesting look. And for, you know, gosh, 9 out of 10 college athletes, that's
right,
what's going to happen. You're not going to go pro in your sport. I mean, that's what they say on those NCAA commercials all the time.
Exactly.
So it's an interesting look at a story that is kind of underreported but happens all the time. So I think people will definitely be able to relate to it. I think it's a good idea. I'm excited to see the finished product.
Yeah, without a doubt. And right now he's going through the funding process. And again, you'll be able to hear his whole spiel and where the production is at this moment in time as far as the production of The Cager is concerned by tuning in to Current Sports tomorrow night at 10 p.m. And you also get to see some footage from Lansing United as they got a big, huge, huge win, actually. A 4-1 win over the Cincinnati Saints on July 4th. And speaking of July 4th, you'll also get to see our hot dog eating contest that we held right here at the WKAR radio studios between Matt, Alex, and I. An interesting competition. Alex ended up taking the W, but you get to see the footage from that moment, from that competition. I just showed Matt and Alex it before we took the air. Pretty amusing stuff, man.
It is amusing, and for the folks at home, it's not as disgusting as one might imagine.
Right, exactly.
You can watch it and you'll be okay.
Exactly. I made sure, that I edited it in a way where it was fun. You didn't see us just chomping on hot dogs for 5 minutes, okay? It's a
Thank
pretty
goodness.
Good piece. Yeah,
Thank
exactly.
Goodness,
it's pretty funny stuff. So you can catch that and also the inspirational story of Ronald Mann. I'll be making this a two-part story for those of you who don't know who Ronald Mann is. My goodness, he has quite the story to tell. He's a UFC MMA fighter, if you will, trained in the art of mixed martial arts, who is an amputee. He lost his left leg in a pretty horrific motorcycle accident. Really struggled with finding who he was at that moment. Even struggled and had suicidal thoughts that I will be diving into. Just telling his story. It's so amazing. He's such an amazing person, an inspirational guy to say the least. You'll get to see a preview of that also on Current Sports TV tomorrow night at 10 p.m. I'm making it a two-part series with Ronald Mann. Trust me. Trust me, trust me, trust me. You do not want to miss that feature. So, again, that's Current Sports TV with guest Keenan Wetzel tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Had a great time filming that this morning. Okay, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He is certainly a friend of the show. He is an MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal, Brian Callaway. Brian, how you doing, my brother? Welcome to the show.
Hey, not bad, Al. How you doing?
Oh, doing fantastic. Always a great time to have you on, Brian. Now, Brian, I want to dive into a discussion that we'll be having amongst the Current Sports crew later on in the hour, something that you reported on concerning, we talked about this in our quick hit headliners at the top of the hour. You reported that Travis Bader, former Oakland star and Okemos native, has signed a deal with ASVEL, Asvel, I believe that's pronounced, in France. When looking at this report, Brian, is this a closer stepping stone for him to make it to the NBA? I know he's playing in the summer league right now, but were you surprised by this move?
Initially, I was surprised, but then the more I thought about it, I mean, it just seems like it's a nice plan for him if he doesn't get in the NBA and affords him the opportunity to play with one of the better teams over there in Europe. And I mean, this is a team that Tony Parker, he was he's a majority owner in the team. I believe he just became president of the team in May as well, too. So it looks like that could be a good opportunity for him. And should he, catch on with any NBA team, he has an out clause, too. So, I mean, he has some wiggle room to get out of it if he does make an NBA team. So I think it was it's a good deal for him to sign.
In your article, you chatted with Andrew Morrison, who happens to be Bader's agent. What was the vibe you got from him about this move?
I think he he kind of expressed to me that it was a very good move for him, and that Travis was very excited about this move and just kind of the opportunity to play with one of the better teams in Europe. And obviously, I mean, this is a team, like I mentioned, is run by Tony Parker, and so I mean, I think that was intriguing to them as well too.
Yeah, without a doubt. And for those who don't know, again, Travis Bader is the all-time leading three-point shooter in NCAA Division I men's college basketball history. I mean, he had quite the career over at Oakland. Right now, he's averaging 8 points, 2 assists, and this is in the summer league right now, while shooting 5 of 14 from the field, 2 of 8 from three-point range for the Philadelphia 76ers summer league team. That's through 2 games out in Orlando, where those games are taking place. And looking at your article here, Brian, he was the team's second leading scorer with 13 points in a win over OKC on Sunday. Now, do you think Bader's performance, now, even though it's still in the infant stages of the summer league, do you think his performance this summer will open some eyes? And were you surprised personally that he did not get drafted?
I wasn't necessarily surprised that he didn't get drafted, but I think, I was from talking in the pre-draft process, Coach Campy over in Oakland, I mean, he was kind of torn on the fact of him getting drafted or not getting drafted, because him not getting drafted kind of gave him the opportunity to kind of reach out and kind of try to catch on with the team that he thought that he could have the best chance of making, or and teams that could need some of the outside shooting that he obviously brings to the table. So I wasn't necessarily surprised that he didn't get drafted. And I mean, I think that, obviously he can provide some very, very valuable tools to a team. And I think he hasn't shot the ball as well as he probably would have liked so far in Philadelphia. But I mean, he could definitely catch on to a team if he is able to impress them with his shooting like he did during the pre-draft process. I mean, because during the pre-draft process, he heard nothing but rave reviews from him, especially from his agent, too, about the way that he had shot the ball at many of these pre-draft workouts that he did with various teams. And obviously, down at Portsmouth Invitational for seniors in May, he shot the ball really well down there as well, too. So, I mean, if he can shoot the ball well, either with Philadelphia or when he catches on with the Golden State Warriors summer league team later, I mean, that could help him catch on.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, Brian, if you had to give a prediction, do you think he'll make it to the league?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know exactly who all he has to compete against with Golden State.
Right.
I mean, it would not surprise me at all if he catches on with some team at some point in time. But, I mean, if I had to make a guess right now, I would guess that he would start out in France.
Gotcha. It's going to be interesting to see how things pan out over there. It's going to be great. That's great that he has that out clause just in case the team is interested in him and he can, make a splash in the league. That's great stuff. We're talking with Brian Callaway, MSU sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Now, also, something else you reported on, Brian, as of recently, happened to be the new addition of a former MSU hoop star, David Thomas, as he will be transitioning now into a role with the MSU women's hoop program as the director of operations and technology. We had Julie Pagel Dombrowski, the individual who previously held that title with Susie Merchant's team. With David Thomas now joining the MSU women's hoop program in that capacity, what really convinced David to make that move, Brian?
Well, I think that just kind of from talking to Susie, I mean, from talking to David at first, I mean, he seemed like he was very happy with his role. He's working at MSU, FCU, as a business manager there, and I think he was very happy there. But the more and more he talked to Susie about that position, I think he became more and more interested and intrigued about, getting back into basketball. I mean, obviously, he played 9 years professionally in Australia, and from my conversation with him earlier this week, he expressed to me that, maybe during that point in time that he maybe considered himself, maybe going into some kind of coaching route or thinking about maybe doing something on the administrative side of basketball. But since he had kind of got into his business ventures, he really hadn't thought too much about that. So, I mean, I think that he was very intrigued when he talked to Susie and kind of heard more and more about, the different things that are entailed in his new position that he has taken over.
So it sounds like Susie was, in a way recruiting this guy, what really is, have you talked to Susie at all about, what David brings to the table and why she wanted him with this program?
No, but I mean, in the release, Susie, expressed that, she liked his business experience, obviously that he played overseas. He's a Spartan. He's been in the program, obviously won a title. He was a part of a championship team with Izzo. So I think Susie really liked those things about him. And I mean, I think, when, had talked to them. They know each other from, you know, different ventures in the community and have gotten to know each other a little bit. So I think from talking to David, she called him one day and started talking to him about the position. And eventually David decided to throw his hat in the ring and go through the interview process and ended up getting the position.
There you have that. And you know, it's so funny because David Thomas, he's a guy who does so much in the community, in the Lansing community. And, I went out to his camp like I do every year at the David Thomas basketball camp that takes place over at the at East Lansing High School. You know, Coach Steve Finnemore was out there, who was the head coach of the boys basketball team over there. Rob Smith, head coach of the girls varsity team. So many out there. Andre Hudson was the speaker there the day that I came. And, chatting with David before we went on the air, David was like, I may be trying to look for another endeavor. So he kind of gave me a hint and kind of gave me a look. So, and I guess, he's making a splash now with the MSU women's program. That's exciting stuff. Now, for those, Brian, that don't really know what the title of, quote, Director of Operations and Technology, end quote, means, can you clarify that for our listeners out there?
Yeah, I mean, they will kind of be doing some of the behind-the-scenes work that for the program, like, maybe arranging travel plans for the team, helping set up things in the community. I mean, the women's basketball team obviously does a lot of things in the community, and obviously Susie Merchant is obviously out in the community a lot, doing a lot of things, and he'll kind of help do those things, help set up travel plans, and then he'll also be there to kind of, be a mentor for the players and talk to them as well, too. I mean, obviously, he's had experience being in a college program, and he knows the pressures of what it's like to be a college student athlete, and he can pass some advice along to these students who, maybe one day hope to play professionally overseas like he did. And just kind of, he understands the grind of what it takes to be a student athlete, and he can share that with them. So, I mean, it's a position that encompasses a lot of different things, and he'll kind of be a liaison for the program and between the program and the community.
And speaking of life after basketball, for specifically two seniors now who have moved on in their careers, Clarissa Bell, Annalise Pickerel, do you know what those two are doing now? Will they continue to pursue their basketball pro dreams, Brian?
Well, that's not new from Clarissa. Obviously, just recently got married to Russell Bird.
Exactly. I saw the pictures. It was a beautiful wedding. And speaking of weddings, we got to get to yours in a second, but continue.
Yeah, she recently got married with Russell, who's obviously now playing out in California. So I imagine that she'll be out there with him. And I'm unaware. I know Annalise Pickerel was initially thinking about maybe kind of playing overseas, but I have not heard anything concrete on what her future plans are.
Well, we'll stay tuned and keep our ear close to that LSJ Sports page. I'm sure, when the news breaks, you'll have it first. Predictions, though, for this upcoming season for Susie and the team, missing, of course, those two key pieces. Clarissa Bell really maturing throughout her time here for the Michigan State women's basketball program. Annalise Pickerel really emerging as a leader for the team. With those two now gone and, and new personnel coming in for this upcoming year, what are your thoughts on this team, on this year's upcoming season, Brian?
I think there should definitely still be plenty of excitement, about this team, just based on the fact, you have Ariel Powers, who had a very good freshman year, and in my mind, probably should have been the Big Ten freshman of the year in a talented Big Ten freshman class, and Tori Kinkoska, coming back, and I think they bring a lot of excitement to the table as MSU will try to, repeat in the Big Ten, but the Big Ten is going to be quite a bit tougher this year with the addition of Maryland and Rutgers, and obviously Maryland made a deep tournament run an NCAA tournament last year, and they should be once again to be good. And Rutgers has historically been a good women's basketball program, and Penn State should always be in the mix. So,
right.
I expect MSU to be kind of in the thick of it as they have been these last few years under Susie, and I think we should expect to see another good season for them, just kind of with some of the pieces they have coming back. I mean, you'll have Becca Mills and Jasmine Hines coming as seniors, and you expect them to do more things next year and provide more leadership. And then you have, like I said, Tori Jankowska and Ariel. And then Brandi Agee, she was a player that came on at the end of last season for them in the tournament. And she should be an exciting player for them as well next year, too. So they have some nice pieces there to work with.
Yes, certainly, and Kiana Johnson still is with, even though she's gone through her off the court problems, but she looks to expect to be with the team as well, right?
Yeah, from what I know of that situation, I mean they've kind of been quiet about that situation regarding Kiana Johnson, but I mean if she's in fact back with the team as well too, I mean that just provides another boost because, I mean, obviously she's shown that she can be a commanding point guard presence for them. So she could be a valuable asset to them too. So, I mean, right there, I mean, if you have that's six good pieces, solid pieces right there, and then you're bringing in a freshman class that where you have the State's Miss Basketball coming in and Lexi Gussard and you have Kennedy Johnson coming in as well too. So, I mean, they have the pieces, some pieces to work with that they can maybe make a nice little run.
Brian Callaway, MSU sports writer for the Lansing State Journal here on Today's Current Sports. Well, Brian, before I let you go, you know what, man? We follow each other on Instagram a lot and Twitter and whatnot. And I've noticed you have your love for baseball and the game of baseball is pretty equivalent to my love for hoops. Where did your love come from, Brian, for the game of baseball?
Kind of like your old boss, Fred, and I just...
don't let me get started with that.
I just really enjoy the sport, and just have kind of caught on to it at an early age from my dad, who was... my dad was a Detroit, grew up in Detroit, and would always take me to Detroit when I was a kid to baseball games, and it just kind of caught on from that.
Did you play at all?
I played a little bit. I stopped playing after sixth grade to run track, but... I've always, even though I wasn't playing, I always just, you know, was a big fan of the sport. Always enjoyed it.
That's great stuff, boy. I tell you, you can catch Brian always Instagramming, a shot of him at some new ballpark, enjoying a game. And also, congratulations is definitely due for you, my brother. Since the last time you were here on the show, you have gotten married, am I right?
Oh, yeah, correct.
How about, he's a taken man, ladies. Don't try blowing him up, okay? How did you know she was the one, Brian?
I just knew. They just know, so.
Right.
That was the case for me, so.
Have you guys been together for quite a long time? How long before you popped the question? And was it romantic when you popped the question?
It was a year and a half, and just actually kind of did it at a Christmas lights display down at a zoo in Toledo, so it was a...
Nice. Yeah, you got on the knee? Did you get on the knee?
I did.
Oh, man, tradition. I got to love that.
Yeah,
well,
you have to do it.
That's right. You got to do it. That's a must. That's a must. Well, congratulations, Brian. Look forward to seeing you when things in the sports season around MSU certainly get rolling next month. Brian Callaway, MSU sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Brian, you take care, and thanks for joining me today.
Hey, no problem. Take care, too.
All right. Got to love that. You got to get on the knee, Matt. Got to get on the knee if you're going to. Well, I'm not saying you're going to pop the question anytime soon, but I'm saying that you got to be traditional with it.
Right. There's a time and a place for tradition, and that seems like one of them.
Exactly. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. All right, folks. Let's hit the break. When we come back, we have a ton to dive into, including the Detroit Tigers. We'll talk a little Travis Bader and so much more. Do not touch that dial. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports on this Wednesday, World Wednesday to be exact. If you're wondering, oh man, why are they playing that interesting music from India? Well, it's World Wednesday. We play music from different continents and different countries. Okay, it's fun stuff. Thanks a lot, Alex, for bringing that to the show. Well, let's transition now into the Detroit Tigers. They were able to salvage a shaky start, to say the least, by JV, Justin Verlander, in last night's game versus the LA Dodgers. Right now, game two of this series is taking place. That's why if you were listening if you were listening in our first segment and you heard my phone go off with an ESPN Score Center update, it was because the Detroit Tigers have taken a 2-0 lead. As the end of the first inning has just taken place, 2-0 over the LA Dodgers right now. So they are on a much better start than they were on yesterday, last night. Justin Verlander, Matt, gave up 5 runs in the first inning. Thank goodness those bats quickly got hot for the Tigers, or else we would have been talking about a totally, totally different story here on Current Sports Today. He ended up settling down after his first tier, after that terrible first inning. The Tigers, they rallied again, a 14-5 victory over LA. The Dodgers only managed one hit off of Verlander after that first inning. So it seems as though Verlander just kind of locked in and things, you know, brought about a different result. But again, JV just doesn't look, he just didn't look focused at all. And Kate Upton, I don't know. You know, I was going to bring it. You know, I was going to say it. Kate Upton, I don't know. I don't, because it seems as though once everything hit the fan, it's like, okay, I need to refocus here. And he looked fine after that. He looked perfectly fine. But that first inning was like, whoa, where's your focus, brother?
Yeah, and this is why the win-loss record in baseball for pitchers is so overrated. Because, granted, he pitched well after that first inning, but the first inning was so catastrophic. 9 times out of 10, you're going to lose that game.
Mm-hmm.
So he's certainly lucky that the Tigers' bats were able to kind of lift him up a little bit. But the other thing is, he was able to overcome that, and I think that speaks volumes to his mental toughness. You know, he goes out, has a rough first inning, obviously, and this, I think it happened in his last start, too. He gave up a few runs in the first, but settled down and recovered. So I think as long as he can continue to pitch well and at least pitch far into games, I mean, he made it through 6 innings.
Right.
Not many pitchers can make it through 6 innings after giving up 5 runs in the first and have it still be just that 5 runs when they finally exit the game. So,
and don't you think that just comes down to focus? Because, you know, looking at how you start a game like that, where you give up 5 runs in the first inning, and then the rest of the game you only give up 1 hit. I mean, that just comes down. It makes you wonder why. Where in the world was that focus at the beginning of the game? And that's it. Really comes down to that word for me when looking at this thing.
And you're right. I mean, it is focus. And the other thing is, it's interesting that the Dodgers, you know, what are their batters thinking?
Right.
Because when you get a good hit, you know, a hit off a guy like Justin Verlander, the next time you're coming up, you're feeling good. You're feeling like, I can hit this guy. I can handle this. And then he just shuts him down for the rest of his outing. I mean, that is, you know, it's impressive from Verlander. It's disappointing for the Dodgers, obviously. But I'm excited that they're up 2-0 today, too, because a series win, you know, sweep these 2 games from the Dodgers,
mm-hmm.
that'd be big. They need every game they can get heading into the All-Star break. So, you know, I'll take a 14-5 win. That's fine by me. A win is a win. Doesn't matter how it happened.
Without a doubt. And you know what? It's kind of like deja vu here. This has happened before. It's not the first time the Tigers have won a game in which JV gave up 5 runs in the top of the first. It also happened, you have to rewind the time here, August 3rd, 2009 against Baltimore. The Tigers won that one as well, 6-5 with a run in the 9th inning. And also, you know, this is kind of deja vu that happened on the same day. For those following the Brewers and Phillies game, it went along just like the Tigers-Dodgers game. The losing team, Milwaukee, scored 5 in the first inning, followed by 5 runs in the second, and became the eventual winners. That's eerie. That is eerie, eerie stuff there. And for me, the key moment happened to be, you know, by Torrey Hunter. If you remember, when the Tigers really, really needed base runners, they're down here. You know, he tried for a double. Torrey tries for a double. He was called out on a beautiful throw. Really, really nice throw from Yasiel Puig. He was called out. The Tigers and Brad Ausmus decided to challenge it, and he was declared safe, and then you saw the Tigers rally. That was a key moment, and probably you could argue the best challenge that Brad Ausmus has had in the replay era, because right then and there, once that challenge was made, that momentum just carried them into that 14, route that they had.
Yeah, I mean, it's the best challenge, certainly when you look at what happened after that.
Exactly.
You know, how they were able to pick it up. But the other thing is, the Tigers are such a veteran team, and, you know, compare this to Brazil and the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the going got tough, they didn't fold. You know, they're not calling it a day and saying, well, you know what, 5 in the first inning, we're toast.
Right.
I mean, they came out, kept playing, and got a huge win. So, I mean, it speaks to their team toughness and how much of a veteran presence they have in the locker room that, yeah, you know what, we're down 5-0 after the top of the first. Let's go get them instead of, okay, today's not our day.
Right.
I think that's a good outlook to have, and you can never count them out. Their lineup is so dangerous, no lead is safe, especially if it's a first-inning lead.
Yeah, that's so true. Folks, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on the Tigers or anything that's on your noggin, 517-355 9527, 517-355-9527. Well, Matt, we just chatted with Brian Callaway, Michigan State University, sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. He really dove into the Travis Bader. He had a great article on it, really broke it in today's paper. Former Oakland Star and Oakland's native Travis Bader. He has signed a deal with ASVEL. I don't know what that stands for. Alex pronounced it ASVEL in our Quick Hit headliner, so I'm going to roll with that. I think it's got a ring to it. And, you know, Bader, he inked the deal Tuesday night. And he can get out of his contract if he makes an NBA team. I want to get your thoughts on Travis Bader. We really haven't really dove into – well, we a little bit. We've touched on Travis in the past. But, you know, looking at Travis and how he's kind of trying to knock on the door of the NBA right now, doing all that he can, all in his power. Again, he's the leading Division I NCAA men's college basketball three-point shooter. Period. He holds the record for that. And I always wonder though, him playing with Oakland University, OU, what if, you know, with that accomplishment, what if he had that accomplishment with another program? You know, I always say to myself, he would have definitely got drafted without a doubt. I think it has to do a lot with the program that he played for as well.
Absolutely. I mean, if he's hitting shots for Kentucky.
Duke or Kentucky. Oh yeah, without a doubt. He's getting drafted.
People are going nuts. He's JJ Redick.
Exactly.
You know? But I think this is a great move for him. A, because, you know, playing in Europe is not the kind of death sentence on NBA dreams that people kind of think it is or it used to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys go to Europe and come back all the time.
Right.
I mean, look at Allen Anderson, Michigan State's own. He played in Europe for years, and now he's, you know, played for the Raptors and the Nets in the last couple seasons.
Right.
So I think the NBA dream is not dead. And Brian mentioned that Tony Parker is part owner of that team.
Yeah.
Could you pick a better connection to have in the NBA than Tony Parker, who plays for the Spurs, probably the best team in the NBA at finding guys under the radar who are prolific three-point shooters.
Ideal spot.
Danny Green, undrafted. Right. Patty Mills, late draft pick. Gary Neal, undrafted. Matt Bonner. I mean, they unearth these guys who all they can do is shoot threes.
Exactly.
And they plug them into their system, and they succeed. So I think if you're going to go to a team in Europe, this is the team to go to because you have that connection with an organization like the Spurs, where if you have an NBA skill and that NBA skill is three-point shooting, you have a chance of making the team.
Yeah, without it, I think that's a great point, because this is like the ideal. If he's trying to make the league and you're going to go overseas to do it, this is, you couldn't have asked for a better spot.
He's got it made.
Oh, he's got it made. And you know what? He had an interesting quote during, I always go back to the draft fiasco that was, and we were talking on the show that Travis may get drafted in the second round if he was going to get drafted. And, you know, he had workouts with 11 NBA teams. And looking at, you know, a quote here from an article around the draft time, he said, quote, "I haven't really had anybody say, we're going to take you, or we really want you and are considering you for this pick. I've just heard a lot of, we'll see what happens draft night, and some smirks and smiles, and have a good day." So, you know, looking at that, if anything, looking at those workouts and looking at the feedback he got when working out with those 11 NBA teams, he didn't really turn any heads, obviously, when reading that quote. This kind of puts a chip on his shoulder for him to work his butt off and really mature his game into more than just being known as a shooter. Because I think in the NBA is so dynamic. I will say this though. I think the NBA game now, really, because we've seen guys who are just shooters or just labeled as shooters have relatively decent success in the NBA, because the NBA game has changed so much. I think now it's more easier for a shooter with the way the game is played. It's easier for a guy who's just a shooter who can't really do much more. It's easier for that individual to have success in today's NBA game, because today's NBA game, let's be honest, first of all, defense goes out the window, period. Point blank, period. I don't think the NBA plays defense until the playoffs start. And I've gone on record saying that numerous times. Remember we had a huge debate with Craig Peterson on the show, former intern.
Oh, yes.
I remember that. Craig, if you listen, the NBA doesn't play defense during the regular season. Now, the playoffs are a little different story, and you can still make the argument there. But with that being said, with there really being no defensive presence and the NBA not being known for its defense in the NBA, it frees up for an offensive juggernaut like a shooter to get his shots more. And I think that nowadays you see so many guys who are just shooters have success. There's multiple examples of that. So I'm not saying that, you know, Travis certainly needs to develop more parts of his game, because you can't be all one-dimensional in the NBA. You have to be able to do something other than that. But if there's an era for you to be successful, it's today's era to do that.
Yeah, I can see that. I do think he does have to improve his defense, though. You gotta get better because otherwise he's Jimmer Fredette. I mean, everybody remembers Jimmer Fredette. Came out of BYU, hit 29 footers regularly in college, got drafted by the Kings, and I don't think anybody's heard from him. I mean, you know, so you can't be that one dimensional. He's got to be able to at least compete defensively against NBA players. I don't know if he's at that level. And like you said, teams kind of, you know, him and Han. Okay, yeah, we'll see how things go on draft night.
Right.
The fact that they're working him out means that he's close. But the fact that they're not saying we're going to draft you, and the fact that he wasn't drafted means that he's still got some work to do. But I think going to a pro league in, you know, in Europe, I mean, that's all teamwork. That's all defense. That's, you know, it's all becoming a part of a team like that. And he has the exposure with the Spurs organization.
Yeah.
I think it's a no-brainer. If I'm an NBA prospect, I'm going to Europe too. It's a great life experience. You get paid way more than you're going to get paid in the NBDL.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a deal like this where you have that out clause, there's no harm in doing it. Why not go?
Right, exactly. You know, it's funny because, you know, when I had Charlie Bill on a TV show and he talked about his overseas experience, I mean, he said those were the best basketball playing years of his life. And we know the man has played in the NBA. The man has played right here at Michigan State University. He is saying that playing overseas, I believe it was Spain and Italy where he played, those years were the best basketball playing years of his life, period. That's saying a lot coming from a guy like him.
Yeah, and so even though, you know, it's not the NBA, and that's obviously the dream for a lot of these kids growing up,
right,
you can still make a darn good living playing professional basketball overseas. That's nothing to sneeze at. So I think it's good for him. I'm happy for him. I hope he succeeds.
I hope so, too. We'll be rooting for him without a doubt. All right, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we'll have a mini Barbershop Wednesday for you. We wanted to get to this on yesterday's show, but Tom Izzo had some interesting comments when you talk about academics and compare it to athletics in the college world. Hear what he had to say and hear our thoughts on it right after this. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Current Sports. Where's that music from, Alex?
This is a Gaelic tune here.
A Gaelic? I'm sorry. I'm ignorant to Gaelic music.
A little bit from Ireland and a little European.
Okay. I gotcha. The river dance. I can see myself river dancing to this. Okay. That's good stuff, man. Yeah.
You can go river dancing here, Al?
Oh, boy. I may just, you know, stand him right now.
That's a current sports episode for for the fall, maybe.
That is, yeah, probably for the fall. Oh, gosh. All right. Well, 10 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we talk about here on the show, you know the number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, today is Wednesday. You know what that means, right?
I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation.
Yeah, you know, I love that movie. Yeah, is that Cedric the Entertainer from Barbershop? How can you not love that movie? That's a classic movie. And today is Barbershop Wednesday, where we dive into a sporting topic and debate about it. You know, there's always a debate going on in the barbershop. You guys have seen the movie. And today we're going to kind of talk about Tom Izzo, because Tom Izzo had some interesting comments when talking about the gap between academics and athletics. And Tom Izzo was actually on ESPN's Outside the Lines recently in a panel discussion about academic issues within college basketball. Now, of course, this was brought up due to the whole North Carolina fiasco that's going on right now, where you have a former North Carolina Tar Heel men's college basketball player coming out and saying that, yeah, the program willingly knew that our academics weren't great and enabled us to make sure we still, you know, surpassed that obstacle, if you will, and were on the team. Izzo was really outspoken about the subject, touching on several issues he sees on the academic side of college basketball. Just to read a few quotes here from him, you know, from the article on MLive here. Quote, after being in constant contact with professors in his early years at MSU as an assistant, Izzo said he now can initiate conversations with professors about his players' academic performance, saying, quote, if I see them on the street or at the grocery store, otherwise I'm afraid to. That sounds a little ridiculous and a little venom to it, but I'm telling you the truth. I do not like the way we've done it personally. Now, the reason for separation between coaches and professors is that administrators fear coaches will apply pressure to make their players eligible. And Izzo said that fear is unfounded. Just a really, that's a quick snippet from that article on MLive. You can find it on MLive right now. It was written by Kyle Austin of MLive. Interesting perspective from Tom Izzo in that regard. And I got to be honest, you know, going back, rewinding the clock to my years in college, I'm not that far removed. I graduated in 2012. We all three of us aren't far removed. Alex is still in college right now, for goodness sake. But looking at, you know, the opinions in this conversation about athletes, and you know, we had discussion in North Carolina that when that story broke, we had discussion as well. When it comes to athletes sort of getting a pass in academics due to their status on campus, and you know, I've gone on record to say it, I've always in the back of my mind wondered whether or not athletes, whether especially in the big time sports of basketball and football, whether those athletes, whether those football players or men's basketball players got a pass on certain tests or certain quizzes or certain assignments due to the fact that they're a household name, not only in this community, but some in this entire nation. I've always wondered that, Matt, and Izzo is addressing that because, yeah, I could see that if time is, you know, if he wants to talk to a professor about, you know, let's say, you know, that Matt Costello was suffering in a certain class, if he was to go to a professor and that word got out to the media or, you know, other outside sources, it could be looked at as Tom Izzo putting pressure on his professor possibly to pass Costello in a certain class. It's an interesting thought process there.
It is interesting, and the thing is, you know, Tom Izzo is an outlier, I think, in this whole thing. You know, he seems to really care about his kids. I mean, you have Roy Williams at North Carolina going, I don't know what happened.
Exactly.
I'm not aware of anything. You know, and it's like, what else is your job, Roy Williams?
Right.
Like,
he's just concerned about getting a W.
Exactly. You're supposed to take care of these kids. You're their coach. How do you not know that they're not going to class or that the class doesn't exist or stuff like that? I mean, that's insane to think about. So I think Tom is a you know, on the other end of the spectrum than a guy like Roy Williams. And that's, you know, I base that off of just what I've read and heard
right,
about in the North Carolina scandal. Exactly.
Right.
So I think as far as coaches strong-arming professors, I could see that happening 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got your star quarterback or somebody who's ineligible and, you know, the big rivalry game's coming up and he can't play because he's failing, you know, math 212 or something.
Exactly.
For me, you don't think that that legendary coach is going to go into the professor's office and try and grease the wheels there and get his kid on the field? I mean,
right.
that just seems like, you know, of all we've learned about the business of big-time sports, whether it's the NFL or the NCAA or what have you, money makes the world go round. So It seems like whatever you could do to protect your brand, I mean, geez, protect your brand, protect your interest, they do it. So
right.
I don't think that saying that no coaches would do it is accurate.
I think there are.
I don't know if Tom would do it.
Right. I'm not sure. But if I had to give a percentage on it, because another thing that's so interesting about this discussion is that we've seen how cutthroat the sporting realm is when it comes to coaches, especially not even just the pros, especially in college athletics. If you're not winning, you're not going to last, period. And if your job's on the line and your star player can't, you know, is in jeopardy of not playing due to academic reasons, you better believe there are numerous coaches that have and are possibly doing right now trying to make, you know, tweak certain areas and talk to certain professors and tweak the transcript to make sure that their player plays on that Saturday or, you know, in basketball or that Monday or playing a tournament. You better believe they're trying anything. And if they can get away with it, it makes, you know, to be real with you, why not?
Yeah, I mean, and it, like you said, it's not just that they're protecting their brand, they're protecting their jobs.
Exactly.
I mean,
yep.
They're looking out for number one, too.
That's right.
And they're going to do anything in their power to make that happen.
So
now,
in that regard, do you blame Roy Williams, though? You know?
Yeah, I do.
You still do.
I do.
In that conversation that right now that we're having about, you know, him protecting his job, I see where he's coming from. But at the end of the day, this is a question of character, you know? And
it's definitely a big ethics thing, too.
It's an ethics thing, you know? For me, I know I couldn't do it. I'm just that type of guy. I know the rules. I'm a guy who I'm very competitive. I'm very competitive. But at the same time, you got to be fair with things and know your boundaries. And I think Tom Izzo, he's always shown it. He's a classy guy who cares about his kids. And, you know, in the article here, he says, quote, "I'm an educator. My degree's in education." And so that bothers me that we do not get the opportunity because I'm a professor in my own right, too. I'm a teacher in my own right, too. I think because we don't have relationships, there is a lack of trust and a lack of accountability. And I totally see where Tom Izzo is coming from. That quote right there shows you the type of coach and type of man that Tom Izzo is.
Absolutely. And, you know, trying to get one player eligible is different than having a fake course.
Right.
It doesn't exist. You know, exactly. It's like,
that's like, come
they're,
on.
They're way different depths. I mean, it's apples and oranges. And I understand it's all kind of under the umbrella of academic fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of Roy Williams, to, you know, if those allegations are true, that's some bad stuff. I mean, he's out of
stuff.
A job.
He needs to be, and he deserves to be out of a job, without a doubt. Alex, quick thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, one aspect to keep in mind is not all those other coaches are education majors like Tom Izzo. Not all of them went to school and learned about teaching, because Tom Izzo goes outside the box rather than if someone asked Tom Izzo, well, did you know about this scandal? Tom Izzo wouldn't say, well, I don't know. Tom Izzo would actually probably talk to his teammates and figure out what the problem is and work with them to figure out a solution. I feel that if you don't have an education background or a major like Tom Izzo did, you're not going to go out of your way to try to solve it. I think there's more that separation between, okay, that's an academic thing. The players can handle that compared to I'm a coach, an educator, and a mentor as well. You see what I'm saying?
I think that's just an excuse. I don't think you have to have a background in education or have to have a degree in education to generally care about how your players are doing in the classroom.
Absolutely.
You're a student athlete.
I agree.
Student first.
No, I agree. You don't have to have an education major, but it certainly helps, and there are a lot of other learning tools and strategies and other techniques that an education major can do.
Like, you ever seen Coach Carter? Coach Carter, that's like the prime example right there. A guy who just cares about his students, you know, the classroom first, making sure that his athletes are getting the message that, hey, you got to perform. If you want to play, you got to perform in that classroom.
Plus, you know, when these coaches are recruiting these kids in high school, they're talking about, and at least definitely to their parents too,
right,
we're going to put you in the classroom, you're going to get a degree, we're going to take care of you off the court too.
Right.
And then they just, you know, put their hands up and say, I don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
I didn't know that was a fake class. That's ridiculous.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll definitely continue this conversation. There's so many layers to this whole conversation. But thank you so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. Thanks a lot to Brian Calloway, MSU sports writer for the Lansing State Journal, for joining me on today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic hump day. And be easy, people.